Welcome to What Should I Do With My Life? Figuring it out from those who seem to have it all figured out. I'm your host, Stephanie Horowitz. When's the last time you stopped and asked yourself, what am I doing with my life? Why am I doing this? Do I even like this? Join me as we hear the inspiring stories of real people to find out what they did and are doing with their lives. Are they satisfied? Would they have done anything differently? Maybe through these stories, we will figure out how to bring more meaning and passion in our day-to-day. Hello, everyone. Before we start today's show, just a reminder to register to vote if you haven't done so yet in the U.S. We know this is super important, so you can go to vote.org to check out your state's registration deadline. Now, for today's episode. Wow, 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 this was a fun one. You'll be hearing from the amazingly talented, enthusiastic, and eloquent Michal Yashinsky. He writes, he acts, he directs, he teaches. He does it all. And he often does it in Yiddish. Michal is a Yiddishist, and he's super passionate about encouraging others to embrace the Yiddish language and culture. I was smiling from ear to ear this whole episode. Michal shares a bit about the Yiddish language and civilization, he talks about his unique experiences as an actor and director, and he shares what motivates him every day to live and breathe Yiddish. There's so much more I could say, but I'll just let you listen. Here's Michal. Hello, Michal.
Hello, Stephanie. Good to see
you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Shana tova.
Shana tova, good fjor.
Good fjor.
A good yor, as we
a
say.
Good yor.
A good zis yor.
A good sweet year.
Yeah.
Yes, we're really starting to get into the mood exactly with the Yiddish. First of all, before we really dive in, I think my mom's one of your biggest fans.
My gosh.
So, just so you know, I'm close behind her. I mean, I think she's really hardcore.
I gave a lecture at Wayne State, just a small lecture sort of for Wayne State kind of Jewish studies department. And I remember her being there and being like a very active participant.
Oh, I'm sure it was one of the best days of her career. But I'm really happy to talk to you and we can kind of reconnect since high school. It's been a long time since we've really gotten to catch up. So thank you for joining me. And I think we'll just dive in, try and unpack what we can. You've done so much and I can't wait to hear about it. So can you please just tell me in a sentence, what do you do?
Basically there would just be a lot of verbs in that sentence, but I teach and translate and act and direct and write. Those are my main things.
Okay. So you're wearing many, many hats and a lot of these hats, dare I say, are in Yiddish. Would that be correct?
That is true. These days, a lot of my work is in Yiddish, and a lot of it flows into each other, but they are all sort of distinct things, and it just depends on the day and time of year, what exactly I'm doing. I'm sort of no one thing, like many of us these days, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like that's kind of the reality of the situation now and for our generation. And I think it's good because you can kind of fill a few different needs that you have and do different passions that you have. So just to backtrack a little, when did the passion for Yiddish begin? Why is it so important? Tell us.
Well, my grandparents, like many of us Ashkenazi Jews in America, spoke Yiddish. I happen to have a couple grandmothers who I spent a lot of time with growing up, both of whom speak Yiddish, one of whom is still around, one of whom is not. One came from a Yiddish-speaking family, was born in Brisk, which is now in Belarus. It's called Brest. Anyway, she came speaking Yiddish with her parents and all of that. And my other grandmother was a sort of secular Yiddishist. She grew up in Detroit, not religious and never became religious, but was very committed to the Yiddish culture and language. And it was from her that I really developed an interest in all that Yiddish is, not just as a language, but as a whole sort of civilization. Got a lot of inspiration from being around her and from learning from her and just spending time among her many books and videos. And I think it was from those grandmothers that I became interested initially, and then sort of just decided this is something I want to pursue seriously and just really be able to speak, because up to that point I had an understanding of Yiddish, but I had never taken a course or anything. So I ended up taking summer courses in it and studying from a textbook, and it just sort of grew and grew and became an important part of my life and career. Yeah. As to why it's important generally, I think just it's important to for Jews to maintain, for people everywhere actually, to maintain some understanding of their roots and where they've come from. And we got that, a side of that in our sort of day school education growing up. We went to school together and we got a very good grounding in sort of Torah and Tanakh, in the importance of the land of Israel, less about sort of the interim years of just Jewish existence in the diaspora. Those are our people. Those Yiddish-speaking people of Eastern Europe are the people from whom we come. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to have an awareness of that, and to, for me, to speak the language, actually, because so many people have tried to take away things that matter to Jews and to immigrant populations who are different. When they come to America, they get stripped of a lot of what they came with in order to become Americans. Mm-hmm. And to me, America is and should be a land of coexistent cultures that are alive and full and rich. And I think it's wonderful to feel that you are continuing and taking part in that richness, sort of.
Definitely. I that resonates a lot with me as well. We throw around a lot of Yiddish in my household as well. My nickname is Madel. Mm-hmm. My mom addresses her emails to me as Madel. She'll call me Madel, Madel. Mm-hmm. There's a few catchphrases like don't hack my Chinook and things like that mm-hmm. we say in our house. Mm-hmm. But I think that's really powerful. And personally, also as a Jew and descendants of Holocaust survivors and grandparents who spoke Yiddish, that means a lot to me as well, what you said. And just to take this step back to make sure everyone listening understands, do you mind just sharing a bit about what is Yiddish? And you were referring to it also as a language, but also as a civilization. So what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. So Yiddish is a European Jewish language that Jews started speaking when they lived in German-speaking lands around the year 1000. In the Middle Ages, they were speaking basically the medieval German of that day, what's called Middle High German. But it grew to become its own thing, and they started writing it in their own alphabet, that is the Hebrew alphabet, and taking influence from their own languages of Hebrew and Aramaic, and from their study of Torah and of Talmud, and putting a lot of that into the language. Then as Jews were expelled from Germany, as they were from basically every European country in those days, and settled in Eastern Europe, it took on influences from Slavic languages and became really the Yiddish that we know today. So it's this sort of hybrid language, although all languages really are hybrid languages of a kind, with influences from Germanic and Slavic and Semitic languages, all written in the Hebrew alphabet. And it's the language of Ashkenazic Jewry, of Jews who have their origins in Germany. And as to Yiddish civilization, to me, all languages have embedded in them lots of culture. So when you learn a language, you're not just learning things like, I want to go to the store to buy two avocados. And if you have a language class that you're only learning those sorts of phrases, it's very dry, because there's so much to be learned that's part of a language. So Yiddish civilization to me is sort of the world of Yiddish speaking Jewry and everything that they created and that belonged to them, their songs and their literature and their rituals and customs and traditions and holiday observances and the ways that they live their lives in Yiddish. Actually, I have an interesting anecdote related to this personally. So I talked about how my two grandparents, one of whom was a secular Yiddishist, the other of whom was a Yiddish speaker, but very religious. And I came back from having attended a summer program in Amherst, Massachusetts at a place called the Yiddish Book Center. And I spent 7 weeks there studying Yiddish. I would later go to work there. But I came back and at a Shabbos dinner, I was telling everyone what I had done on the summer program. So I told them that I learned a lot of Yiddish language and Yiddish culture. And my Baba, she says to me, "What do you mean Yiddish culture? We didn't have any culture. We were poor."
Yeah.
So that's her understanding of it. But to me, of course, they did have culture, right? Because culture is the ways that they lived their lives. So everything that they did really and that was unique to their way of being was culture. So all of that is Yiddish civilization, I guess.
That's really interesting. Did you make her second guess that when she said we didn't have culture? Did it make her stop and think, oh, wait, I guess, you know, the way we lived our lives and what was important to us and what we did.
I did try to, yes, I definitely did explain that. And of course, she has proverbs that are passed down in her family and songs and lullabies and all sorts of things that she actually maintains and that she passed down to her children. She just doesn't think of them as culture, you know, because there's this understanding maybe that culture is the ballet and opera and things like that, which those sorts of things, high culture, do exist also in Yiddish.
So you're kind of, one of the things you're doing is really trying to bring Yiddish back. And Wow, I have so many questions. I don't even know where to start. But I guess one of the things I want to say is it seems, at least to me, and you definitely know more because you've been really involved in Yiddish and studying it and teaching it and living in it, really, there is some kind of revival and Yiddish is cool. And, you know, we know that Fiddler on the Roof happened in Yiddish and you were in that, and we'll talk about that in a bit, as well as on TV. We're seeing more shows, not just out of Israel, but, you know, out of Israel, Shtisel, and then Israeli cast members and Unorthodox. And a lot of these shows are in Yiddish and getting quite a reach. So why do you think that is? Can you explain this phenomenon or why Yiddish is coming back?
Mm-hmm. First, I'll say that I guess to a lot of us who are sort of involved in Yiddish, making Yiddish culture today, don't feel that we're necessarily bringing it back because it didn't necessarily ever go away.
Uh-huh.
Certainly, there were many, many generations, I mean, many, many parents of sort of the last generation or the one before it that didn't pass on Yiddish. And Yiddish was that chain of transmission was lost in a lot of families. But there are also lots of people who grew up in Eastern Europe or who grew up speaking Yiddish in New York or wherever and who are still around today and who did pass it down. And there's never been a time when Yiddish literature wasn't being written and Yiddish books weren't being read. But I do agree with you that there does seem to be a new sort of vogue for Yiddish today, which is wonderful. There's the series you mentioned. There's also a wonderful movie called Menashe, which is, I think it can be seen on Netflix, but it was in sort of art cinemas a few years ago. And that was another great Yiddish language movie filmed in Brooklyn.
Maybe I don't know, it's broadcasted more instead of people speaking Yiddish in the house. And then maybe when they go into their day to day in a different society or a different country and they're speaking in English, maybe it's just something at home. And now we're seeing it on TV with subtitles where kind of people who have TVs, or again, also with books, people who can have translations can accept, you know, it's more accessible to them.
Yeah,
now.
Totally. No, definitely there's like a new visibility and a resurgence sort of Yiddish media, and it's mm-hmm. a wonderful thing. I wonder if some of it has to do, just thinking about why that might be so, I wonder if it has to do somewhat with our political climate and the sort of person we have as president right now, and the sort of attitudes that seem to be dominant in society of sort of anti-immigrant and anti-multiculturalism, mm-hmm. and promoting this idea of America that's sort of monolingual and white and I don't know, just this sort of, and people pushing back against that and people craving something that goes against that narrative sort of. So I think people are eager now to hear marginalized voices and to hear the minority cultures and minority languages, and are eager for that because there's such a sort of awful sort of negative trend and right. trying to push it back against that. I think that was part of what made performing in Fiddler so powerful last year. I mean, we played for a year and a half, but it was 2018 to the beginning of 2020. We were doing it in this climate, and we were performing a 3-hour show all in Yiddish in the heart of New York at a time when people were posting videos online of people being abused literally in the streets just for speaking Spanish or whatever it is. And here we were being very proud and open and visible and in a minority immigrant culture and language, and showing that, you know, we can appreciate such works and appreciate such stories. And this too is America. I think part of that is maybe why these things are so popular these days.
I love that. I mean, it's obviously unfortunate circumstances if that's something that's causing people to suddenly, or maybe not, maybe it's the flick of the domino that's making people want to embrace their culture more or their roots and embrace more where they came from. A great segue is you spoke a bit about being in Fiddler on the Roof. So side note, Michal and I were in Fiddler on the Roof in high school, and he was Tevye, and he will always be Tevye to me. He was amazing. I need to find that DVD somewhere while I'm here in Michigan.
But you were Shandel, right? Maltel's mother?
Oh, thank you. You remembered. Oh, I was Shandel. I had a couple lines. One of them was, I don't remember. It was like, what's that about my boy Muttle? That was one of two. And then there was the quick change from sunrise, sunset to the bar scene where I had to take off the skirt, keep the pants on, put the beard on. L'chaim. So that was a lot of fun, but I'd love to hear a bit about how you got involved in that. I mean, I know you, first we'll just talk about the acting element. So how did that happen, and what was that experience like for you?
It happened through an audition, like most of these things happen. I went and auditioned. I had taken part in an earlier production done by the National Yiddish Theater Volksbühne, which put on the Yiddish Fiddler. I had taken part in this show called The Sorceress. And then when we were doing The Sorceress, it was just a staged reading of it for a few weeks. And when we were doing of it, the Volksbühne had their sort of annual gala, and we were there. And at the annual gala, they announced that the coming summer's production would be Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish, directed by Joel Grey. Mm-hmm. And all of us cast of The Sorceress who were sitting there in the audience, there was just like instantly sort of this excitement that bubbled up among all of us. And of course, we all knew we had to go and audition for it. So I did, and as did many, many others. Like, I always forget the number, but I don't know, thousands of people somehow applied for an audition for this, to be in this show. And I was among the lucky few that were chosen. Yeah, the audition itself was a very scary experience, sort of just preparing for it, especially because I knew Joel Grey would be in the room.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Joel Grey, just as an actor that I've admired growing up, and I remember I got Cabaret from the Farmington Community Library and watched it as a kid and loved it. And here he was, and I was very scared of him being in the room and not knowing how that would affect me. But when I went in there, he was just a very sort of sweet, smiley sort of presence and was laughing throughout the bits that I had prepared and delivered. Sure. And just put me at ease. You know, I gave it my all, and it worked out, and it was a really wonderful experience.
How long were you performing?
We performed for a summer. It was meant to just be the summer of 2018, and that was it. And then there was in the contract, there could be a week's extension. So that came to be actually pretty laughable that there was a week's extension written into the contract, because it ended up being extended and extended and extended. So it played from the summer of 2018 to January of 2020. Mm-hmm. So very long time, very much longer than the expected 7 weeks. And just because there was this sort of this excitement and this hunger around this story told in this language, in the language of the characters. Yeah, I left for a few months to go and teach at the University of Michigan. I had already gotten a job before I auditioned to be in Fiddler. I had gotten a job being the Yiddish lecturer at the University of Michigan. So that was already set for September after our 7 weeks performing, and I left the show to go take up that job.
Was it hard for you to leave?
It was hard. Yeah, it was very hard. I remember the last night with the cast being very emotional, and sort of, I was in kind of a lot of places at once, because I was on stage feeling the emotions of the scene, but then I was also feeling the emotions of my last night there. And sometimes they worked well together, you know, like at the end of the play, you're leaving each other. You're right. Leaving your fellow townspeople of Anatevka and all going your separate ways. So I sort of felt that a bit. But then the show went on and it moved uptown to a bigger theater and they asked me if I would come back. So I took a leave from teaching to go back for the second semester and go and perform. And then it came time for me to go back to University of Michigan once the next fall semester came. And I was still, this show was still going and I was getting more offers for performing and I just felt like I had to stay. So that's where I am now. I'm still in New York, was living the theater life up until the COVID pandemic.
Growing up, I mean, clearly you were involved in musical theater, you know, at a younger age, but growing up, did you think you would, and that soon we'll get to teaching and then soon we'll get to some of the other things you're doing, but did you ever think you would pursue acting? Did you think it would be a hobby? Did you think it'd be a career?
Yeah, I always loved it. And I loved being in the shows in school and we were in them together and it was just always a lot of fun. I did always hope that I could do it someday professionally, but never really sort of set out to do that. I sort of, I continued acting through college and then after college, I did acting sort of in smaller productions and didn't ever expect that I would just like go to New York City and pursue an actor's life. But those opportunities kind of just presented themselves and I went and seized them and it just sort of turned out as it did. I guess I didn't think that I would be acting professionally, but I somehow in the back of my mind and in my heart, I felt that maybe someday, yes, if things lined up as they did. Sort of I leave a lot up to just what the world, how the world opens itself up and what I come across. And I leave myself open to those things. I guess I felt that it was conceivable, was possible, partly because of my grandparents. My grandmother, who I described as a secular Yiddishist, she and my grandfather were both actors. That was their career. And they did it in Detroit. They raised five kids living as actors in Detroit at a time when that was actually possible to really make a career of that in Detroit. So they acted on a lot of radio dramas and commercials and on stage. So from their example, I knew that this wasn't completely a fantasy.
Right.
A lot comes, I think, from that, from those grandparents. Yeah, I sort of attribute a lot of who I am and a lot of what I'm doing to them. And that gives me strength also, just to think of how I'm carrying on their legacy in a way.
Definitely. That's extremely meaningful. How could you? Yeah, that's a huge motivator. You're working really hard and you really connect strongly with what you're doing. That's something most of us are looking for as well. In addition to acting on stage, you've also been involved behind the scenes or off stage as a director or writing. So can you share a bit about that? When did that start? Are you still doing that? What does that look like in your reality right now?
That I guess I did pursue more directly right out of college, sort of, because it was something that I did in college. I directed shows in college, operas and operettas and things like that. And I also did playwriting courses and pursued that after college. I had gotten an internship at two different opera houses while I was in college in Detroit and in Vienna, and ended up writing to the Detroit Opera House after graduating and said, "You remember me from when I interned there, and maybe there'd be an opening for me in some capacity." And they were looking for an assistant director for their season opening production in 2012 of Barber of Seville. I ended up doing that and assistant directing other productions there and directing children's productions there. They do a children's opera every year, which I directed. I also ended up directing a play in Yiddish with the students of our high school. Yeah, I went back and taught Spanish there for a bit. And when I was teaching Spanish there, I applied for a grant for the school for this Fishman Foundation of Yiddish Culture. Then they give out grants that promote projects that in some way promote Yiddish among young people. So I said, well, I could direct a play in Yiddish with the students of this school, my alma mater and the school I'm working at. And they gave us the grant money and ended up putting on this one act fantasy drama all in Yiddish with those students. Theater has always been a great passion of mine and I'm interested in sort of all aspects of it. And I continue to be writing and translating for the stage and hope to do more of it and get back to directing. I mean, I think it's all sort of one betters themselves and gets skills and experience, and then more opportunities come along, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, one has to go out hunting for them. But thankfully, things, as I've, you know, made myself a more interesting and well-rounded person, I guess, and gotten interesting experiences, things do sometimes just sort of come to one. And you do have to be open and ready to seize them, as I have been. But yeah, a lot of it is just sort of chance, I think, and what sort of what God lays out, maybe. I don't know. But,
right. Chance and keeping your eyes open. And
yes,
definitely. And one of the things you said just now was really, you know, working as you get more skills and get more experience, et cetera, et cetera. And it just made me think, how did you know you'd be good at directing, for example? Like, how do you learn how to do that? And how do you, what kind of qualities do you think you have that make you a good director? Or when you were starting off and maybe you were a bit nervous the first time you were directing, you know, what skills did you have to get you through and help you succeed?
There was one moment when I was applying to direct an operetta, a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta in college. There's a society, the Harvard Radcliffe Gilbert and Sullivan Players, and they put on Gilbert and Sullivan operettas two a year, and they were looking for a director. I was just a sophomore then, so I was sort of young to be applying for such a position, but I went in and they had me take a moment from the show, which was The Gondoliers, and stage a tableau vivant, or living panorama, of their board members in that moment of the show. So I was to take all of the board members who were there to sort of audition me and to just arrange them in a space so that they created an interesting and attractive stage picture that somehow encapsulated that moment. And I just had a lot of fun doing that, and I was able to sort of make it fun also, and that they did as well. And together we created this spirit of joy and experimentation just in those few minutes. And I thought that this could be something I'm suited for. I like working with a whole bunch of people and having there be a spirit of freedom and experimentation in a room and building off of everyone's best skills and making it a joyful space. I think joy and fun and frivolity, they can lead to very wonderful things. So I think I was grateful that I was able to do that with actors that I've worked with. And to me, that's the most fun bit of preparing a show, is being in a space, if you're a director, being in a space with the actors, just sort of trying things out. There are a lot of other hard bits that go into being a director. There are, you know, there's a lot of thinking at home, and there's a lot of meeting with designers and production staff and trying to get your vision onto the stage. But just being there, collaborating with actors, to me is the most fun. Yeah, I suppose that I was able to bring that sort of liveliness to the space. I felt I was suited to the work. And yeah, there's the one director that I'm always sort of reading interviews from him and watching his work and getting inspiration from him. His name is Mike Lee. He's an English director, and he directed one of my favorite movies, which is called Topsy Turvy. And he creates his movies in a very interesting way, where he doesn't start off with a script. He starts off just with gathering his actors, and they have a basic story and their characters laid out, and then they just improvise. Mm-hmm. And then from those improvisations, he writes his script. I like trusting actors, you know, and their intuition.
It seems pretty fitting for you, and is checking a few boxes, if you will, of things that interest you and things you like to do, as well as skills you have. And you also mentioned how you were teaching also in the high school setting, also in the university setting. So is that something you sought out? Were you thinking, I'm, you know, a master in Yiddish, and I would love to teach this and spread it and educate people? Or did the university and the school, did they approach you? Was it just an opportunity that presented itself, or did you want to teach?
I wanted to teach. I wanted to disseminate this language and this culture, and because I'm so enthusiastic about it, so it gives me joy to bring it to others. I guess a combination. When it come to the University of Michigan, I was sent the sort of posting, the job posting, and by a supervisor at the Yiddish Book Center, and he said, you should go do this, you would be excellent. Yeah, and then I went and applied, and that went well. There was an interview and all sorts of preparation involved. They offered it to me, and my parents were very glad, because I'd never been, a Wolverine, and a few of them, like my parents and my brothers, so I was finally kind of becoming a Wolverine by joining the faculty there. It was a wonderful thing. I loved doing it, and sort of if it had come in a somewhat different part of my life, then I would have remained there doing it, because it was so fulfilling. But there were just all sorts of things happening in New York, kind of, that I felt I had to go and seize. Sometimes I go and apply, sometimes people offer things to me. Like for this summer, I taught in summer programs from two New York Yiddish institutions, EVO and the Workers' Circle. And they just said, would you like to teach Yiddish for us this summer? I think it always starts with kind of building yourself up and putting yourself out there. And then once you have, hopefully things kind of start coming to you.
Yeah, well, they definitely have for you, that's for sure. So that is good words of wisdom for everyone. Put yourself out there, say yes, take the risk, do the opportunities. I'm wondering what gives you the most energy, because basically everything you described fulfills you in some shape or form and makes you feel pretty good about what you're doing. So if you had to pick just one.
I think acting just to me is the most viscerally exciting, just being in a company of actors, sort of the feeling that you get, just the anticipatory feeling of being in the wings and waiting to go on stage and hearing the music. And it's just something so that just sort of fills up your soul and your whole being. And to me, that's, you can't replicate it in any other way. And I just love that feeling. I love being part of a sort of just a band of people just working together on something and as equals. It was sort of, I felt it was interesting coming back from teaching at the University of Michigan to rejoining the cast of Fiddler. And in some ways, it's a loss of a lot of dignity from between those two positions. At the University of Michigan, I was a teacher, so I was sort of in charge of a classroom of students, a few classrooms of students, and I had my own office with its own name placard. It has a lot of sort of, that kind of position has a lot of dignity, and I try to create a sort of feeling of camaraderie and equalness with my students, but it's essentially, there is a hierarchy sort of, and right. It's very much felt, and you're sort of on top of some other people. You're having to give out grades and evaluate and all that. And then coming to act again in the troupe, I was in, a very sweaty and cramped dressing room of like 14 other men, and just kind of having to endure very long hours and being told, do this again and do that routine over and over and over. And it's sort of just being moved from place to place, sometimes literally, a director sort of taking you and moving you or... Mm-hmm. So it was very much kind of a reversal, and I sort of relished it, kind of that experience. I think it's sometimes nice to feel that way, to sort of feel like a bit of a, just like you're really, I don't know how to put it. Like sometimes as an actor, at the end of the night, having performed two shows, and I would have still like mic, when I would find mic tape on my neck, from having taped a mic there earlier, and I would be going to bed and find myself like taped all over. I would
itching.
It felt a bit like being like an animal. Just like having their way with you and doing.
It's humbling. Humbling.
Yeah, very humbling. That's the word. And it's nice to feel humbled now and again. So right. I like that experience of being an actor too. You get the sort of some parts of it are glamorous and opening night parties and things like that. And some bits of it are very humbling.
You get a bit of all of it. And I think that's important because on the one hand, obviously you deserve to be, I don't know what the word really would be, but.
I don't know what the words are either. I'm finding it hard to.
I'm always tripping.
I think
tripping.
You know what I mean.
I totally get it. And I think everyone listening also gets it. Again, many, many hats, Michal, many fedoras, some cowboy hats here, some berets. I know you previously worked with the Yiddish Book Center, so I'm wondering, are you still with them, what kind of work did you do? As well as what have you been up to now, also with COVID? Also, I'm always seeing posts that you're doing of various music videos and auto-tune and dubbing Broad City and lots of cool stuff. So I'd love to hear more about everything you're up to now as well.
I think this time during COVID has become even more, I've talked about how my career has been sort of diverse and multifaceted. And during this time, it's maybe the most so because I was in a show that went a year and a half, and that was a steady thing, you know, it was like full time going into the theater nearly every day working. And since the pandemic started and all the theaters have been closed, that doesn't exist anymore, that sort of livelihood. So I've had to patch a lot of things together, but I am doing that and making it work, teaching and translating and writing and, you know, little performance gigs and online, of course. So kind of just putting a lot of things together. The next big thing I'll be working on is I'll be teaching Yiddish for the Workers' Circle in YIVO in the fall, but I'm also going to be translating a play from Hebrew.
Oh, wow.
You know, we studied Hebrew growing up, and I still do work in Hebrew sometimes. And I'm translating a full-length play from Hebrew for a couple of people who want to see it in translation and want to maybe do something with it.
Wow.
So once theaters return. So that is exciting and hopefully will be promising work that will have some future. The Yiddish Book Center is just a wonderful sort of institution of Yiddish literature and learning and research. And I worked there for 3 years, first as a fellow. They have a fellowship just for young Yiddishists who have skills in the language and want to come work there for a year. So I did that and then was rehired as a senior fellow and then was rehired just to work there for a year, working more on their textbook project. There is a project to write a new Yiddish textbook. And we did that. And finally, actually, just in the mail the other day, I got this textbook. In Einem, the new Yiddish textbook with our names, Asya and Jordan and I.
Nice.
And this is like a really thick 2-volume textbook for teaching and learning Yiddish.
Oh my gosh.
I use that in my classes and I get a lot of joy out of using it and sort of revisiting, actually working on it and crafting these exercises and finding these texts that are in the book, and that now I'm able to use them myself. So that is very gratifying. Yeah.
You're busy. You're not just twiddling your thumbs over there.
No.
You have a lot going on.
Yeah, I do have a lot of rachmonis for those who don't necessarily have something going on because this thing has upended all of our lives.
Definitely.
In a lot of dramatic ways. Thankfully, I am still able to keep working and keep doing what I love to do, really. That's been like the greatest blessing of my sort of professional life is that I've gotten to do what I love to do and what feels meaningful to me.
Definitely. And a few last questions because we are running out of time. For people who want to bring in a bit more Yiddish to their lives, do you have any little tricks of the trade or some things they can do to incorporate more Yiddish in their everyday life?
There are lots of online classes being offered these days that can be taken by anyone in the world from really great people in the field. Things aren't happening in person. So wherever you live, you can take a Yiddish class with YIVO or the Workers' Circle or probably a bunch of other institutions, but those are the ones I'm most familiar with. If they're interested in it, especially if they have it in their background, I think it's important to have some understanding of it. Do that or buy a Yiddish textbook, read Yiddish. I think it's wonderful to, you know, appreciate Yiddish, to listen to songs and to watch films and to use words. But the more people we have speaking it and using it tog teglech on an everyday basis, the more alive it will be. You know, it's a living language, but it's even more living and has more life to it the more people there are speaking. There's a wonderful Yiddish, she's a Yiddish teacher and she's a culinary historian and she translates cookbooks and things. Also a friend of mine, Eve Jochnowitz is her name, and her email signature is read cookbooks, talk Jewish. And she repeats that like 50 times in the signature, read cookbooks, talk Jewish, read cookbooks, talk Jewish. I don't know. I think that's cute and meaningful,
I like that.
In some way.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I definitely want to bring more Yiddish into my life. And I'm just wondering, I feel like you gave a lot of nuggets of wisdom as it relates to finding your passion and saying yes and having these opportunities. And I'm just wondering if there's any other advice that you would give to someone who wants to take their passion and make that a reality of their day-to-day or their work.
I'd say trust in your passions and trust in what you can bring to the world, because everyone has something going for them, and it's something that they could probably build even more and practice and grow in. But I think everyone has something innately in them that they have to offer. I felt that way with Yiddish when I first started learning Yiddish formally, that it all went so easily because I felt it was already sort of a part of me somehow. And I think everyone has that with something that they feel is a part of them that they can bring out. So I'd say trust with what you feel inside and what you feel you can bring, and about trusting what you have and trusting in the world to some extent as well, and in being open to the world. I mean, it's just such a sort of, there's just such a bounty of things to take advantage of. And there's such wonderful people to meet and to learn from, and wonderful places to go. And I'd say, don't remain in one box, you know, sort of get to know people and get to experience different places and ways of being, and fall in love with different people, and fall in like with different people. And yeah, I think being open is very much an important thing to keep in mind, and celebrating what there is. Yeah.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That was really eloquently put. So what can we expect from you next? What is on the bucket list for you?
Hopefully this Hebrew play, people can look out for that. I don't know if I want to like say the name even now, just because it's a very much in the early stages, but the producers of that feel that that's the case, that we've gotten a lot of Israeli media lately in terms of film and television shows, but not that much in the way of theater. Mm-hmm. And Americans don't know that much Israeli theater, and there are some really good works out there. And hopefully in the new year, the return of theater generally.
Yes.
Something we've all been waiting for, actors and audiences alike. So nothing exactly is being planned, because one can't know with this thing when things will return. But and I suppose, yeah, the videos. I forgot to talk about those. There will be more Yiddish videos coming out from my laboratory.
They're amazing. Well, they're so amazing.
Thank you.
Is your Facebook public? Can people just go to your Facebook and watch those videos? Where can they find those videos?
I've been making videos for this organization, the Workers' Circle. Those are most of the videos I've made, these fun sort of music video-like things. They can check them out on their page, the Workers' Circle Instagram page or Facebook. And I've done a few of those. There will be more coming. I think the next one will be about voting. So just inspiring people to go out and vote, but in Yiddish.
Good. I'll definitely be on the lookout for those. I love all those videos that you're doing. So this was amazing. Thank you so much. I really learned a lot. And if you didn't see, I mean, people are only listening to us, but I've been like smiling really wide the whole time. This has just been awesome. And before we finish, I just want to know, what should I do with my life? How do we say that in Yiddish?
Mm-hmm. So you could say simply, was soll ich tun mit meinem Leben?
Oh man,
was soll ich tun?
Was soll ich tun?
What should I do with my life? Mit mein Leben.
Mit mein Leben.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I love it. I'm scared to say the full sentence. And then, really importantly, we should know how to say, nobody really has it figured out.
Mm. So there's actually a Yiddish proverb that basically kind of captures that, which is, a Mensch tracht und Gott lacht.
A man, is it truth? Does it have to do with truth and luck?
No, you're right. A person tracht, thinks. A person thinks, und Gott lacht.
A person thinks in good.
It's a good person, effort, but a person thinks and God laughs.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Jews say that, a Mensch tracht und Gott lacht. There's only so much you can plan. You can plan as much as you want. And this is sort of the experience of being a director. You plan a lot in your room beforehand. You look at the score and the script and you listen to it and you write down a lot of notes and diagrams. And then you come into the rehearsal room and everything changes because you're open to what your actors are giving you and the choices that they're making. I think that's widely applicable. A Menschentag in Gutlacht. You can only do so much planning.
Agreed, agreed. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Thank you so much, Michal. I really appreciate this. Look forward to seeing more of your videos and more of what you do, bringing more Yiddish back into my everyday. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Shalom Dank.
Sei gesund.
Sei gesund.
Bye. Hi, all. A few things that really stuck out to me in this episode with Michal. A lot of what gives him strength and satisfaction is that he's carrying on his grandparents' legacy through Yiddish. I just love that so much. It's so clear what motivates him, what makes him fulfilled, and gives him satisfaction. I also really loved how Michal said that sometimes experiences and opportunities come to you, and sometimes you need to go out looking for them. But you always need to be open and ready to seize them. I think this is great advice that we should all be taking. Also, Michal said that everyone has something that's a part of them that they can bring out. Just trust what you feel inside and what you can bring. He felt Yiddish was already a part of him, and it all went so easily, so naturally. That was kind of his calling. And we all have something like that in us. It's just a matter of finding it and listening to it. I could say so much more, but I'll leave it at that. Let me know what you thought of the episode, and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. See you next time.